This is the Great Les Paul with the Great Chicken Reel as we ease into today's edition of Talking Animals on 88.5 FM WMNF. My name's Duncan Strauss, here with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. This month, we're celebrating the show's fifth anniversary. We launched the program in Southern California in June of 2003. Here we are 5 years later. They said it couldn't be done, folks. For more information about the show and past guests, as well as archives and iTunes podcasts, I invite you to visit our website, talkinganimals.net. In just a few minutes, we'll be hearing our conversation with today's guest, Moby, the songwriter, musician, veteran animal advocate, whose 1999 album, Play, sold more than 9 million copies, is critically acclaimed for nearly all his work, including the new album, Last Night. We'll discuss animal issues and hit on other topics, including the way his attitudes have shifted regarding how he presents his views on some of these issues. And the conversation we'll hear with Moby in a few moments here on Talking Animals. Meanwhile, it's time for our animal news items and announcement section, and I want to invite you to find out how cat ownership is good for your heart. SPCA Tampa Bay offers free blood pressure screenings for visitors to promote the health benefits of cat ownership. The screening takes place from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., and cat adoptions happen until 5 p.m., and then this happens again on Sunday from noon to 5. The SPCA is at 9099 130th Avenue North in Largo. For more information on the SPCA's Cat-Terrific Adoption Day, log on to SPCATampaBay.org or call 727-586-3591. That's 727-586-3591. All right, let's step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner, which involves animal-oriented comedy, of course. This is Mitch Hedberg with a part of a piece called Smacky the Frog on today's Comedy Corner here on WMNF.
I went to England to tell jokes. I wanted to do Smokey the Bear joke in England, so I had to ask the English if they know who Smokey the Bear was, but they don't. Because in England, Smokey the Bear is not the forest fire prevention representative. They have Smacky the Frog. It's just like a bear, but it's a frog. I think that's a better system. I think we should adopt it. Because bears can be mean. But frogs are always cool. Like, never has there been a frog hopping toward me, and I thought, man, I better play dead. Here comes that frog. I've never said, here comes that frog in a nervous manner. It's always like optimistic. Hey, here comes that frog. All right. Maybe he will settle near me, and I can pet him and put him in a mayonnaise jar with a stick and a leaf to recreate what he's used to. I certainly have to punch some holes in the lid because he's damn sure used to air. Then I can observe him, and he won't be doing much in his 16-ounce world.
All right, that was the late, great Mitch Hedberg with a snippet of a piece called Smacky the Frog, taken from his album Strategic Grill Locations. I'm Duncan Strauss. This is Talking Animals on 88.5 FM WMNF. Our website is talkinganimals.net, where not only all our past programs are archived, yeah, all 5 years of them, but most are now available as podcasts in iTunes. For example, our show last week with Janine Garofalo. We also have a link to the Talking Animals MySpace. We're looking for friends. And there's a place to subscribe to our semi-monthly email newsletter so we can keep you posted on forthcoming guests, program news, and remind you when the next show will air right here on WMNF. That's all on talkinganimals.net. It's nearly time to hear our conversation with today's guest, Moby, so let me quickly outline a few important details about him. He is a man who wears many hats, including those of songwriter, musician, DJ, and animal advocate. Moby enjoys the status of a recording artist who's enormously successful, both commercially, his 1999 Play album sold 9 million copies and then some, and both critically as well, including his highly lauded new album, Last Night. He's also worked as an activist on behalf of multiple organizations and causes, including MoveOn.org and Animal Welfare, which is a longtime passion. Indeed, that passion formed the core of the conversation I recorded recently with Moby. This is that recorded conversation with Moby now on Talking Animals on WMNF. Okay, let's welcome Moby to Talking Animals. How's it going, Moby?
I'm fine. How are you?
Thanks. First, congratulations on last night. A wonderful record that's been widely embraced. And I certainly want to come back to it and other aspects of your music. But since the focus of the show is animals and animal issues, I'd like to start kind of more in that realm.
That sounds great.
All right.
I'd honestly rather talk about animals in my record anyway.
Okay, well, hopefully we'll do both. So you've spoken a few times in recent months, including, I think, at South by Southwest and on Morning Becomes Eclectic just a couple days ago, about having once been a militant vegan. And I'm just sort of wondering what constitutes a militant vegan. What were you saying and doing then, and how would you contrast that with what you were saying and doing now?
Well, I'm still a vegan,
mm-hmm.
and I'm still an animal rights activist.
Right.
But my militancy, this was about 20 years ago, my militancy was such that, like, I would actually not eat with people who were eating meat, and I wouldn't go to restaurants that served meat. And but then at some point, I realized that my militancy was just making people defensive,
mm-hmm.
and my militancy was also making me not a lot of fun to hang around with.
Right.
And I wasn't, I mean, the ultimate goal was to, you know, make, in my weird presumptuous way, to try and make the world a better place. And I didn't find that my militancy was accomplishing that. So now I've, you know, I'm still a vegan, and I still would love to live in a world where animals are not used for human purposes. But I realize that I have to, you know, be very respectful of other people's choices and other people's perspectives and have a dialogue with people rather than just talk at them.
And like, was this sort of a gradual realization and then sort of adjustment then in your MO?
Yeah, I guess around maybe the mid to late 90s, I realized that my stridency and my didacticism was just turning people off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that I found that if I met up with someone who was a, you know, a hardcore carnivore, if I yelled at them, it just made them angry.
Right.
You know, it didn't make them question their choices.
Sure.
Whereas if I sat down and had a respectful conversation where, you know, I explained my beliefs and they explained their beliefs, and the goal wasn't to convert them but rather to just communicate with them, I found that you could actually reach people a lot more effectively.
Sure. Try not to alienate and see if you can have a little mm-hmm. meeting of the minds, as it were. So to what extent then was including the info about being a vegan in the CD booklet of Play, you know, where does that sort of fit in the continuum?
Well, I mean, I grew up playing in punk rock bands,
mm-hmm.
and a big part of being, like, the punk rock scene I grew up in was very political and very committed to sort of doing almost like social outreach, as it were. And so whenever I've made records of my own, I've really, you know, I've tried to include essays or messages in them, and I've written for different magazines, and I write a lot on my website, moby.com.
Sure.
Just my way of sort of, you know, putting my opinions out there,
mm-hmm.
and my goal isn't to get people to agree with me.
Right.
My goal is to just sort of like create a dialogue with people.
Right. And so that raises, I guess, kind of interesting point along the lines of Disco Lies. I sort of want to ask about that video. And but first, I guess, for you know, one of us should probably describe for listeners who haven't had a chance to see it, what you know.
The video for Disco Lies, it starts off with a bunch of little tiny chicks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, little baby chickens in a slaughterhouse. And this one chicken watches all these other chickens being killed, and it traumatizes him. And then you fast forward 10 years later, and he's 7 feet tall, and he's a giant pimp chicken.
Right.
And so he's walking down the street, and he sees a sign for MFC, which is supposed to stand for Moby Fried Chicken. And there's a picture of me as the white-haired southern proprietor of MFC, Moby Fried Chicken.
Right.
And he goes in, and there's a big disco in the back of the chicken store, and he attacks my security guards, and I'm dressed up in my southern plantation gear, and he chases me through the streets of Mexico City and eventually catches me and kills me, and then he eats me while he's surrounded by strippers.
And it's quite an extreme. Yeah, it's.
I mean, the idea. I mean, the idea is for it to be funny, or
right.
anything else. So I hope people. I mean, there's nothing terribly earnest about it. I mean, it's just funny.
Sure, sure. I just, I mean, sort of a revenge of the fowl, I guess. But I mean, I guess, yeah. Back to what we were saying a moment ago. I mean, for you, it's just kind of a nice piece of video making and a gag. I mean, does it fall anywhere in particular in the continuum of a reformed militant vegan, or is it just, hey, this is kind of a funny idea, and let's just put it with this cool song that's on my new
primarily
album?
Primarily, it's a funny idea,
mm-hmm.
but also, I mean, there is an animal rights message there.
Sure, of course.
But,
yeah.
I mean, it's not an overly serious, overly strident message.
Right.
Clearly, it involves a 7-foot-tall pimp chicken chasing me dressed as a colonel, you know, like a plantation owner,
right,
down the streets of Mexico City, and then eating me.
So, right.
I mean, it's
yeah, the KFC and sort of factory farming chicken, you know, message probably wasn't, you know, wouldn't be lost on too many of us.
Yeah.
But
so it's,
yeah,
sort of, I mean, I think that it's almost the way, like, if you decide to be an advocate for any cause, one of the questions you have to ask yourself is, how can you be an effective advocate?
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of times, you know, I certainly was guilty of thinking that by yelling loud, that made me an effective advocate. And by yelling loud, all I did was get people to plug up their ears.
Right,
and
right.
So, you know, if you want to be a good advocate, you have to figure out subtle and effective ways of actually reaching people.
Sure. Let me just say, this is Talking Animals on WMNF. If you just joined us, we're in the midst of a conversation recorded recently with the musician, DJ, animal advocate Moby, whose latest album is called Last Night. So, Moby, most folks don't hit the ground running as a vegan, much less a militant vegan. When did you first become interested in working and speaking on behalf of animals?
Well, I became a vegetarian in 1985.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, I mainly became a vegetarian for the simple reason that I liked animals and I didn't want to eat them. You know, I didn't want to do anything that contributed to their suffering.
Sure.
And that's what led me to be a vegan as well. And then, of course, the more I found out about veganism, you know, how it was better for the environment and better for health, it just sort of solidified my decision to be a vegan. And I guess I started working with animal rights organizations in the late 80s, early 90s. And now, I've worked closely with PETA, but now I guess I work closest at this point with HSUS, Humane Society.
Yeah, yeah, I was going to ask about that because, I mean, at this point there are loads of animal welfare organizations, you know, almost maybe possibly too many to count. And yeah, you really do seem to have chosen to align yourself most closely at the moment, at least, with the Humane Society. You know, why or why them in particular?
Well, with HSUS, I mean, it's the legislative side,
mm-hmm,
of Humane Society.
Sure.
Because they're so powerful and so effective.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, as far as improving, you know, animal welfare around the planet, really. And they can, you know, they went, like, to Ben & Jerry's, for example. They went to Ben & Jerry's and were able to talk Ben & Jerry's into changing over from using, you know, battery-farmed eggs to cage-free eggs. And just that, you know, that simple move, we're talking about hundreds of millions of,
yeah,
eggs and, you know, tens of millions of chickens whose lives and welfare are being improved just from that one simple, you know, that one simple action.
Sure.
And, I mean, I admire, you know, smaller, more grassroots animal rights groups. I really admire them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, one of my goals is very utilitarian. It's trying to improve the quality of life for as many animals as possible.
And HSUS certainly, you know, huge, yeah, and very powerful, as you say.
And it's also, it's a process. I mean, you know, for example, if you look at the abolition movement, the abolitionist movement, both here, you know, in the States and in the UK, it was a long process. You know, they didn't overnight just decide to free the slaves. You know,
sure,
it was a long process of granting certain rights and granting certain liberties. And once you sort of do a little bit of work, it makes it a lot easier down the road to do the big work.
Yeah, you just have to chip away at it. And
yeah,
and it also seems like, too, in light of what you were saying a few moments ago, that HSUS may sort of be more on the kind of wavelength that you sort of have embraced in terms of, you know, I mean, PETA, I know that you're involved with PETA, but just by way of contrast, I mean, I think for a lot of people, even if they've modified their approach and tone a little bit in recent years, I mean, it is a bit more shrill. It is a bit more militant, vegan, you know, kind of approach, as opposed to HSUS, who may not be as immediately recognizable to as many folks say as PETA might be, but there's a much more sort of sober, even-handed approach, it seems like, to getting things done.
Yeah, I mean, I have great respect for anybody who works to improve the quality of life for animals.
Mm-hmm.
And PETA, I mean, they've done amazing things, and they continue to do amazing things.
Sure.
Because, you know, a lot of what PETA does is also legislative, and it also
of
has
course
to do with lobbying corporations, but that's not the glamorous stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's room for PETA's sensationalistic approach.
Sure.
But from my perspective, like, the really utilitarian, effective work is on the legislative level.
Yeah, yeah.
Because ultimately, that's how, I mean, that's how the world, you know, for better or worse, the world has changed through corporate policy and legislation.
Right, because you know, somebody will be horrified by something and they'll say, well, can't something be done? Isn't there a law about this? And, well, there either may or may not be, but if there is, it's probably not enforced because it's weak or, you know, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, getting, like, for example, getting 10 people to become vegetarian is a huge accomplishment.
Yeah.
But in the grand scheme of things, it hasn't really, I mean, considering you're talking about hundreds of billions of animals being killed every year.
Sure.
So I'd almost rather, instead of getting, convincing 10 people to be vegetarian, as noble as that is,
mm-hmm.
I'd rather get, a company like Walmart to stop having, you know, battery farm chickens.
Sure.
Because then all of a sudden you've improved the quality of life for literally, I mean, tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of animals.
Right. So backing up then, I guess, you know, something like the Disco Lives video, you know, is at least as much just, you know, kind of a funny idea, but it's also hitting, you know, some ideas in that same kind of broader mm-hmm. way than just talking to, you know, 10 people you might see after a concert that you give, let's say.
Yeah, and it's just reinforcement, you know, mm-hmm. it's like even reminding, you know, you make something funny, but you remind meat eaters, I mean, every meat eater who has a conscience is uncomfortable with the way their meat is produced.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most of my friends who eat meat, they just don't want to think about it.
Right. Right. There's a convenient disconnect.
Yeah.
And they acknowledge it readily.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. Something like the Disco Lives video is just sort of like subtly and humorously reminding meat eaters of where their food comes from.
Right. Right. And as we've kind of acknowledged, I mean, the world of animal rights and animal welfare is really a sort of a busy, crowded place, and it's, you know, teeming with lots of causes and agendas and messages and philosophies and styles. From your standpoint, I mean, if you were limited to just one, and for the sake of this question, let's say that you are, what is the single most important animal welfare issue in your view at the moment?
Oh, boy. I guess from my perspective, it would be the most egregious issue of animal abuse, mm-hmm. which for me is, you know, essentially all the animal testing in general
mm-hmm.
is a waste of time and money. You know, but
right.
especially things like the Dreyer's test.
Yeah.
You know, where they have testing, you know, these tests that continue just because outdated legislation mandates that they continue.
Sure, but it doesn't really yield any useful information.
Yeah, you know, I mean, testing oven cleaner and testing, you know, nail polish remover in rabbits' eyes and, I mean, that there's just no justification for it.
Turns out it hurts their eyes.
Yeah, I mean, the tests have been done millions of times, and the results are always the same. If you put oven cleaner in a rabbit's eyes, the rabbit's going to go blind.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they've already, not that they should have done it in the first place, but the fact that they've already done it means that there's no reason they should be doing it now.
Yeah, we've kind of established this unfortunate detail. So,
yeah.
This is Talking Animals on WMNF. We're speaking with Moby in a conversation recorded recently. You know, and along those lines, I was thinking about a few more things I wanted to ask you about earlier. I happened to notice that Oprah, I think it was just today maybe even, announced plans to embark on a 21-day cleanse, whatever that might mean, that includes removing all animal products from her diet.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking, wow, you know, I mean, not long ago she did a, you know, great program on puppy mills, and if this is, you know, depending on what all this really means, I mean, back to your idea of HSUS and just reaching a lot of people in kind of one fell swoop.
Yeah.
Boy.
Well, I mean, if
go
if
Oprah.
Yeah, I mean, if Oprah suddenly decided to sort of become a vegetarian advocate or an animal rights activist, that would be phenomenal.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I still do believe that ultimately the world will become a primarily vegetarian place,
mm-hmm.
and that might sound naive and that might sound overly optimistic, but I mean, there's so many. It's not just if the only issue were ethical issues, then I think it would be a much harder sell. You know, because when you trying to convince someone not to eat meat because they want to be nice to animals,
mm-hmm.
that's hard because a lot of people are very selfish.
Sure.
But the fact that, you know, like the health ramifications of a meat-based diet, you know, I mean, every time you open a newspaper, there's another issue thing about E. coli or cancer or diabetes or, you know, heart disease, all these health problems that come from eating animals.
Yeah.
And so I think ultimately, I mean, everyone in my family, for example, even 20 years ago, they were all hardcore meat eaters. And now they're probably 90% vegetarian.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, just imagine how that would affect animal production if 90% of the people in the United States became primarily vegetarian.
Well, and as you're suggesting, there's a few different ways sometimes to arrive at the same point. I mean, I think, now the environmental impact of eating meat, I think, has, seized people's attention, and that might be another way to get people to sort of back off at least, X amount of meat for in a given week that they would otherwise consume.
Well, I think it's a huge scandal. I mean, the UN released that report a couple of years ago saying that 22% of greenhouse gases and climate change gases comes from animal production. Animal production is responsible for more greenhouse gases than every internal combustion engine on the planet combined. Yet, in Inconvenient Truth, it's not mentioned once. And if you talk to, like, the NRDC and all these different environmental organizations, it's the issue they're afraid to touch because they think that's the one that's going to really alienate their members.
Interesting.
So it's almost like, animal production is the inconvenient truth that's too inconvenient for environmentalists.
Wow. Well, maybe we'll get there. Maybe there's another film waiting to be made on that one, along those lines.
Unfortunately, bad news. I have to get going.
Oh, okay. Well, I just have another minute or two here, Moby, because we're almost at the end of our time anyway. But speaking of films, I did want to at least briefly ask you about Moby Gratis.
Okay.
And just see if you wouldn't mind taking a moment and sort of describing, what it is and how it works and why you launched it.
Well, I've done a lot of film music work over the years, and when I went to school at SUNY Purchase, State University of New York at Purchase, a lot of my friends were experimental filmmakers, and they always complained about how hard it was to license music for films. So what I've done is I've started a website called MobyGratis.com that gives free music away to independent filmmakers and film students and not-for-profit filmmakers. So basically any indie filmmaker or film student can go there and use the music on Moby Gratis for free.
And the other thing that's cool about it, too, is that even if it's not necessarily a student or anything, still if there's a commercial application that back to Humane Society, I guess, ends up with those funds.
Yeah, there are about 70 pieces of music on MobyGratis.com, and if any of the music gets used commercially, whatever revenue is generated goes to Humane Society.
Absolutely. That's great. Well, I know you got to go, so I'm just going to say that, again, thanks for joining us today on Talking Animals, and thanks for all your great work on behalf of animals over the years. And, again, the new album is Last Night. And any touring, beyond just sort of these dates here and there, I know that you're doing and DJing, but any actual official tour, are you sort of not inclined to do that anymore?
Yeah, all I want to do now is just, like, random sporadic DJ dates and occasionally playing live because the idea of going on tour for 6 months straight just makes me miserable.
Right. So just dates here and there, and the DJing thing really seems to be kind of your chief passion.
Well, it's just really fun.
Yeah, cool. All right, Moby, well, thank you again for your time, and thanks for joining us on Talking Animals, and just again, thanks for all your great work over the years.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
Okay,
bye-bye. Okay, bye-bye.
All right, thanks one more time to Moby. His website is Moby.com, and he's on MySpace, of course, too. I'm Duncan Strauss. You're listening to Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. The show website is TalkingAnimals.net, which I hope you'll visit to sign up for our email newsletter, subscribe to our podcast, check out our MySpace. Of course, we're looking for some friends just like you. Make suggestions for future guests or topics and more. That's all found on TalkingAnimals.net. It's time to proceed to name that animal, too, and there's always a prize for our winner, but today it's a little different setup. The prize is a copy of The Art of Racing in the Rain, a fantastic new novel told from the standpoint of a wonderfully wise and philosophical dog named Enzo. I read the book a few weeks ago, and I still think about Enzo. The catch is that if you win the book, I'll ask you to call or email in during the July 2nd show, when our guest will be author Garth Stein, who wrote The Art of Racing in the Rain. So, the book goes to the first person who calls in at 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies the animal tune here. It's Name the Animal Tune on WMNF.
Well, I'd be doggone if I wouldn't work all day, baby. And I'd be doggone if I wouldn't bring you my pay, baby. But if I ever caught you running around, blowing my money all over this town, then I wouldn't be doggone. Hey, hey, I'd be long gone.
Hi, can you name that animal tune?
Doggone.
Well, that's pretty close. That's close enough. There you go. Okay, cool. What's your name? First name. What is it?
Justin.
Justin, okay, Justin. And are you game to, if I send you this cool book, to then either call or write in on July 2nd when we have the author of this book?
I can do that, yes,
cool.
Sir.
Cool, okay, because I think you'll really like this book, and it's really cool and well done, and so I won't say anything more, but well, good. Well, I'll put you back on hold, Justin, and I'll send that book off. You get your info in one sec, and then
we'll
hopefully hear from you on July 2nd. So thanks for listening, and thanks for playing Name That Animal Tune.
Hey, my cat wants to say hi.
Okay. All right, we just about reached the end of Talking Animals here on WMNF Tampa. The program airs twice a month, specifically the first and second Wednesday of each month. So we'll be back again Wednesday, July 2nd, again with our guest, Garth Stein, author of The Art of Racing in the Rain. If you're looking for a book to read right now or on your summer vacation, consider this one. You'll thank me later. Speaking of thanks, as you may know, this month marks the five-year anniversary of Talking Animals. So thanks to all guests, listeners, and supporters of all stripes who helped us reach that milestone. Please visit our website, talkinganimals.net. And while you're there, please sign up for our email newsletter. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. Please stay tuned for NPR News, followed by Democracy Now! I'll return for another edition of Talking Animals, featuring our guest, Garth Stein, Wednesday, July 2nd, on WMNF Tampa. We're closing out today's show, as always, with an animal song. And who better, really, at this point, than Moby to be taking us out of the show today. So this is a new one by Moby from last night. It's called Hyenas, right here on WMNF Tampa. We'll see you July 2nd. Thanks again.
J'ai fait le bon saut de la bête féroce. J'ai appelé les...